Now, Peter Sheridan, good afternoon.
Hi, Ray.
Good to see you.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Yeah. So, Philo is coming to the Gaiety Theatre. When was this from originally? It's been going for a while.
Yeah, a couple of years now, on and off. A couple of runs, you know, 4 or 5 week little tours with it. But it started very small. It started in the Sean O'Casey Theatre in East Wall. Nice small theatre. And then we went to the Viking, which is a very small theatre. And then we got a couple of invites around after that. And just slowly and gradually, more and more people contacted me to say, we'd really, really love to see this play. So it's become a really quiet hit. And then we got an invitation to the Civic Theatre in Talla and the Pavilion in Dunleary. And we stuffed both of them. And I thought, brilliant, this is just extraordinary. And then the Gaiety rang me and said, we're hearing a lot about this show that you have out on the road. Would you fancy taking it in here for a week? I said, would I what?
Yeah.
Of course I would, yeah.
That's great, isn't it?
So it's just one of those things. Yeah. That, you know, you can't plan them. They just happen. You don't know what, you don't ever really know what's going to be a hit in our business.
And Philomena.
Yeah.
Is based on a woman that you met.
A woman that I met and got to know really well.
Yes.
But everybody knew her.
Right.
She was a huge personality in the Sheriff Street, East Wall area. You know, she had a big personality and a big mouth, as we'd say in Dublin, you know. And in the early 80s, I was working with an organisation in Summerhill in Dublin called the North Centre City Community Action Project, of which Tony Gregory was the chairperson. And a couple of things happened in early 1982 that were very significant in terms of our organisation. Tony stood for election. He was 33-1 on Paddy Powers to win a seat, but he actually won the last seat in the Dublin North Central constituency. And we were we had an office in 20 Summerhill Parade. And after the election, Tony held the balance of power. And suddenly,
yeah, he was a kingmaker. Yeah,
Cahy, yeah. Bertie Ahern, Brennan,
they
all turned up at our door looking for Tony's vote for Cahy's Taoiseach. And we had put in an application to the Department of Labour for what they called a temporary youth employment scheme at that time, under the arts banner. They'd never given money for the arts under a temporary employment scheme. But because of the political situation that we were in, suddenly we got the word that it would be met with a different thing now. So we got this money. And not only did I get money to do an arts project, a theatre project, a drama project, but we were allowed to break the rules of the age. There was an age limit of you had to be under 25.
Right.
So they gave me a pass on that one and I could take two or three older people.
So Flory was one of those.
And Flory was one of those. And another woman called Jean Doyle, who went on to play Rita in Fair City for 10 years.
And Flory went on to act herself.
And Flory stayed at the acting. She was more of a stand-up comedian than an actress.
Right.
But, I mean, the very first play
but
I did with
them... There's sort of echoes of your dad in that, isn't there? Didn't he come to acting quite late?
Yeah, really late. You know, he didn't come to it until his 40s.
Right.
You know, and that happened out of a tragedy. But, you know, Flory had this remarkable comic ability. I remember the first play we did was set in the Monto. It was called The Kips That Digs the Village, which are names that the Monto was known by. So she was playing a character that was based on Dicey Riley. You've heard of Dicey Riley.
Yeah, poor old Dicey Riley.
But she was a prostitute in the Monto.
Right.
So Flory played this character based on her, sang the song, of course, in it.
Yeah.
But her opening line in the play was she was standing outside of a house and a client comes along and he says to her, excuse me, I was looking for a woman. Are you poor? She says, am I poor? I'm not poor, I'm a whore. And the entire theatre erupted. And it was like, you know, because everybody's so nervous on an opening night. And we just knew we were home. And just Flory was just like, she knocked them for 10, you know.
And
she just had this amazing ability.
Has died, didn't
Yeah, she passed dead. Away about 8 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
So she hasn't seen Philo.
No, but I wrote a book earlier in 2004 called Big Fat Love. And, you know, I talked to her, I mean, for hours and hours over many, many days and nights. I recorded her hours and hours of tapes because I just wanted to get her entire backstory.
Yeah.
Some you use, some you don't. But the character was inspired by her is the way I describe it. And I wrote this book, which was very successful in Ireland, Big Fat Love, and people loved it. But I always wanted to put that character on stage.
Right.
And trying to, you know, obviously it's always really difficult to find the right actress, you know. And then there was another, I mean, I knew I didn't want it to be a one-person show. So I put her in with this one because when I actually auditioned her for the drama. She was working in a convent off Sheriff Street, making dinners and doing the bingo numbers.
So that's the setting for Philo as well.
And that's the setting for Philo. Yeah. That was the setting for the book.
So, there's Philo, Philomena, and then the nun.
And then the nun.
Yeah.
And the nun was kind of based on a nun who came on an arts programme that I ran in the mid-80s.
Right.
And she was looking for... She was looking to renew her vocation and she just wanted to do something different. So she came and worked with me for almost a year in this arts project and she was a fantastic person. And
using people as real life people as inspiration.
But Peter. That's all writers ever do.
Yeah.
People always kind of...
But has it been spotted? Has somebody ever said, that's me? Or...
Well, you know, I always go back to Sean O'Casey. Sean O'Casey was sued by many, many people in East Wall because he named all the characters after the people who lived in the area.
Right.
And they sued him. Like, Flute or Good's a real person.
Right, right.
Captain Boyle was a real person.
Yeah.
There was a guy called Jock Sardade. He didn't change the names. And they sued him. And indeed, got small money off him.
Right.
But loads of them did get money off him in the courts.
Yeah.
You know?
So East Wall is where you're from. I've spoken to Jim, obviously, about
yeah.
it. So there was, what is it? One girl and six boys.
Correct.
Yeah, Frankie then died at
And then
the age
Frankie
of 11.
Died in 67.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, on the 17th of April.
Did you have lodgers as well?
We had lodgers as well, yeah. The lodgers were great.
What class of lodger did you have?
Well, they were usually country fellas. My mum was a country woman from right. Dundalk who had grown up mainly in Belfast because her own mother died in childbirth having her.
Right.
So my ma had this big thing about being a mam, being a mother. And minding everybody and loving everybody. So as part of kind of paying for our education, my ma took in these lodgers. In fact, when I wrote my book 44, the opening scene is my da writing out the ad for the newspaper, attracting the lodgers in. 44 Seville Place. Lodgings available, centre city location, all modern conveniences, you know, just with my dad, you know. And then, of course, the lodgers turned up and my ma interviewed them.
Right.
Took them in. And, of course, she couldn't say no. We were supposed to take two lodgers. We ended up with six because my ma couldn't turn people away.
Yeah.
So they were all over the house, you know. So some of them slept in the same room as myself and Jim, who was Seamus, of course, to my ma, or Shay to us. So the lives of the lodgers and our lives kind of interacted madly,
right.
Really madly, you know, but so brilliantly as well.
And probably gave you an understanding of the rural personality or type or mentality, because the nun is rural. She's from Clonakilty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Philo is obviously East Wall, pure
yeah,
East Wall.
Pure East Wall.
But there's a lovely bit in it where the nun goes, she went shopping and she went into town.
Yeah.
And she got something in, what street was it?
Amiens Street.
Amiens Street.
Yeah.
And then Phil goes...
She says, I was uptown in Amiens Street in a trophy shop. And Phil says, uptown? In Amiens Street? Amiens Street's not town. Town doesn't start until you hit Talbot Street.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the biggest laugh line when you do the show in East Wall. Everybody goes mad because that was a thing growing up. See, one of the things about Sheriff Street, Ray, was Sheriff Street was like a village just outside of town.
Right.
And there was a huge wall that ran all the way down Sheriff Street and around into Common Street and all the way up. And it was called the Boundary Wall. And we were hemmed in there in Sheriff Street. That's what it was. It was a hemming in, a boundary wall, a division. A division. But, like, you know, we didn't want to be in a divided community.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was a remarkable place to grow up in. Apart from the lodgers,
and
the area was just incredible. You
has
know?
Flory's family seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They love it.
Do they? Yeah.
Oh, of course they love it because it's a celebration of her life. I mean, the character, you know, like Flory was just one of those people who, for example, would curse profusely and completely get away with it. There are people who can do that. They're not that many. But she would use names for things that I blush.
That's interesting.
Thinking about them. I couldn't say them on afternoon radio.
Yeah.
But she was just got away with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I've a pain in me, you know what.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
all
yeah,
that
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of.
And in a way, then, so she can be frankly honest with the nun and ask her questions that nobody's ever asked her before.
Exactly.
About
she penetrates. She cuts through to the core of something.
Yes.
Which, when you think about the religious thing,
and
the religious
I was wondering, as a man writing
yeah.
the parts of two women, Is that difficult? Was that difficult?
Well, you know, I mean, like, all of the women in my plays are kind of a version of my mother.
Right.
My mother was a remarkable woman, as remarkable as fellow Flory was. Her own backstory was amazing, losing her mum on the day she was born. So my mother never celebrated her birthday. We never sang happy birthday to
mum.
It was the saddest day of the year.
Right.
As opposed to the happiest day of the year. And she just would not allow it to happen. But I didn't realise that until I kind of got a little bit older. I didn't realise that when I was this kid. But as I got older and began to, you know, discover, you know, what my own ma's story was. And the other thing about my ma was easily the bravest person in the house. My ma was much stronger than my dad. Like, for example, the famous story in our house was, cattle came down several places every day, bound for the boats, right? So they came right by our house. And on one occasion, it was a Friday lunchtime, a cow got away from the herd and came in our back door and into our kitchen while we were having our lunch. So we were all sitting around
the table.
Did
that actually happen?
That completely and 100% happened. We all ran. Everybody ran out. I dived under the table with Jim.
Right.
My dad ran upstairs. And my ma got a dishcloth.
Yeah.
And she backed the cow out of the kitchen and back out onto the street.
Yeah.
So from that moment on, I knew that my ma was the brave one in the family.
Mm.
But my ma afterwards worked in the North Star Hotel. She worked in the bar there. The hard men in Sheriff Street would look in. If my ma was on, they'd keep going.
Ah.
They were afraid of her.
But your dad took to the bed after Frankie died.
Yeah, a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just completely lost it. I mean, he started believing he had a brain tumour himself.
Right.
So he had these headaches, these blinding headaches. So we just all, you know, pottered around the house quietly. The blinds were always closed and his thing. And he just opted out. And my ma held everything together. My ma was the cement that held our family together during that period. It was remarkable to watch her do it.
But that's a story that's echoed around the country, Peter. You can say the same about our family.
Yeah.
There's nine of us.
Yeah.
Our mother definitely kept things together.
Yeah, and my ma was emotionally far more intelligent than my dad.
Oh, yeah.
My dad was in.
My dad was singing my song.
My dad was intellectually bright, great mathematician.
Yeah.
All those things. But when it came to the really important stuff, my ma was the one you would go to. You wouldn't go to me dad. My ma was brilliant at knowing there's a problem with somebody. I know there's something going on there. Mm. He's not right, you know. And and of course, the lodgers all adored her. Absolutely adored her.
You probably don't know this, or maybe you do. It's the 25th anniversary of The Borstal Boy.
You mean the movie. State?
The movie.
Oh, the movie.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah. 2000.
God, 2000, yeah. Well, 1999, 2000.
Yeah,
yeah.
It sounds like 2000.
Which I shot, of course, in Nace, a lot of it in down
Did
in
you?
Nace. Yeah, yeah. We shot the Liverpool scenes.
All right.
Yeah, Liverpool was Nace, actually, with a couple
and
of.
And Danny Dyer was in it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know the things that happen, and this is the thing I love about, you know, Ireland and just the things people do and how funny we are as a people. We put up a couple of red letterboxes and a red telephone box. There were dozens of letters in the letterbox when we finished shooting of a day. People were posting their letters in the letterbox that was part of the set for Liverpool. And you just think, after all of the fight for freedom, what we suffered as a nation to rid ourselves of the oppressor, we'd no problem. Oh, I'm sure I'll post me letter in that box, that red letterbox.
How long did it take you to make that? Because it was there were false stones, weren't
it? It was a 30-day shoot.
No, I mean, how long did it
take? Oh, I've been working on it for 8 years.
Yeah.
And 5 years, because I had Sean Penn originally on board to cast as Brendan Behan, and he was great, you know. And I spent a lot of time in his estates with him. I got to know him really well. We went on a journey together in a car from New York to L.A. It took 7 days, just me and him in the car talking about Brendan Behan and Ireland and Irish history, and you know.
That sounds about right for his intensity. Is he an intense man? Seems like an intense man.
Well, the first thing that he said to me was he was going to get his teeth filed down because Brendan had lost his two front teeth. And he was going to get his teeth filed down so that he looked.
And did you say, wait till we sign the contracts first?
No, I said to him, listen, I'm now your daddy, Sean.
Yeah.
You're not getting your teeth filed down.
Yeah.
Because my ma wouldn't allow you to do that. And it my ma wouldn't allow you. Then it's not right. So, but look, he would have. I mean, the truth of it is he's wild. He's a wild person, which is kind of what makes him attractive.
Are you attracted to people like that?
Yeah, I'm attracted. Yeah, I've always been attracted to kind of, in a way, bold boys. But
why is that?
I'm a steadying influence. I'm very much a steadying influence on people.
So is that because you see in them something that you would like to do if there was no consequences?
No, I like the wildness. I like people who kind of take chances and take risks and things and kind of break the rules a bit. And maybe I'm not that good at breaking them myself, but I certainly get drawn to people like that. And Penn and I had a great relationship. We really did. Fantastic relationship. I know he's mad about me and I'm mad about him.
Right. You know, I heard you say somewhere that because you were sober, that he felt safe in your company.
Yeah, yeah. I stopped drinking in 89 and I was working with John in the 90s.
Why did you stop drinking?
Actually, it got the better of me. I needed to stop. Right. I needed to stop drinking.
What age were you?
I was 34 when I finally stopped, but I'd been making several attempts to stop drinking. I mean, the thing that propelled my drinking was Frankie's death. I discovered whiskey when Frankie died.
What age were you then?
I was 15.
Right.
But whiskey and peppermint. I fell in love with whiskey and peppermint. And it just took me to another place. And I had an amazing experience on whiskey and peppermint shortly after Frankie died. You know, we had people in the house and I got drunk. And I went to bed and I forgot that Frankie was dead. And when I woke up, I thought he was still alive. And something happened and Jesus, he's not here. He's dead. And it was the drink had taken me to that place where, in a way, it wiped my memory clean. And I thought, oh, my God. So for years, whiskey and peppermint was my drink. And, you know, I suppose I got 10 or 15 years out of drinking. And then it got worse and worse. And it never got better. Mm. And I knew I needed to stop. And eventually I got the courage to stop drinking. And it was the best decision I ever made.
And Peter, was it interfering with your work?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
There's no question. Anybody who's drinking alcoholically or drinking to excess or drink is a problem. It interferes with every area of your life.
And do you ever look back and go, you know, if I wasn't a drinker in those years? Because they're very productive years.
No, I never have that regret at all. But the thing I do have is now loving sobriety more than I ever loved drink. I love the idea that when I wake up in the morning now, I go, oh, I know where I parked a car last night.
Right.
I don't ever have to have that conversation again. Yeah. I don't ever have to think, where did I put the car? Or did I say that to that person? I better ring them and find out. Did I make a need? So all of that negative bad stuff goes away. And sobriety is a beautiful thing. It's as beautiful as the drinking, because the drinking is fantastic. I mean, I loved pubs. I was a total pub person. I'm an entertainer. I love stories. I gathered stories in pubs.
Yeah.
The characters I loved were in pubs.
Well, here's the question then. Do you think you're left out of things now because you're sober, that you don't drink? Do people not invite you? Or
No, the opposite.
Right.
I would say the opposite.
What, designated driver, is it?
Well, the thing is that one of the things I did make, you know, when I got sober, one of the things I always said to my daughters, my sons were a bit older, but my two daughters who were younger, when they started kind of going into town, I said, don't ever, ever think that you have to wait in town for a taxi.
Yeah.
Because I'm always up. I'm a late night person anyway. I never go to bed before 1 o'clock in the morning, hardly ever. So I'm always up and I'm always doing stuff. And I have spent my entire life driving into town, collecting my daughters and their friends and bringing them home. I love being able to do that.
That's great.
That's a real bonus to the kind of when you drink. Yeah. That you can do stuff like that and do it with a smile and be really happy about it. Yeah. And in fact, I drove my daughters to a restaurant the night before last and collected them from it and drove them both home. They're both married now with their own partners.
Right. So, Philo, the Gaiety Theatre, April 22nd to 26th. Nellie Conroy and Eve McGrath. And Nellie, she's done that a number of times.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary that Nellie grew up in number two, Abercorn Road. I was born in number 12, Abercorn Road. We moved from there. And Sean O'Casey lived in number 18 when he was alive. So it's got this street, it's a magical place for me, that part of East
Wall. And Nellie had met Florrie.
And knew her very well.
Right, okay.
So when she came to kind of read the part and play the part, I didn't have to explain stuff to her.
Yeah.
She got the DNA of it, which is great when you're watching a performance that has that. And Niamh McGrath is just a very special person, the girl I've gotten now to play Sister Rosaline. She's actually the writer in residence in the Hawkswell Theatre in Sligo. She's a really bright girl. She's fantastic comedy. So the two of them make hay with the comedy in it, yeah. which is fantastic.
It's very funny, but it tackles very serious issues as well.
Of course it would. Flaherty's life was like that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you gave a pen picture of Flaherty's life, you know, she was pregnant at 15 by a man in Liverpool in a nightclub. Yeah. That story is true.
Oh, that's true, right?
That story is completely true. She came back to Dublin to discover that her mother was also pregnant at the same time.
Right.
So mother and daughter were in the rotunda at the same time having babies. She didn't know who the father was. So at the beginning of the story, she goes back to Liverpool to try and find him because the son is out of control. Yeah. You couldn't make that up.
Just before we go, because this is sort of it's not a serious question. It's nothing to do with that, but to do with theatre. Because like when Shakespeare was writing theatre, it was populist, wasn't it? It was the cinema of the time and all that sort of thing. Has theatre gone sort of a little bit?
The thing I always tell about Shakespeare, because I'm a huge Shakespeare fan, the audiences who came into London to see the Shakespeare plays, just like now, a lot of them were travelling in and it was a big day out to go to the theatre. But they would go in the morning to Tyburn Hill and watch a public execution.
First.
And then when the execution was over, they'd go down to the theatre and watch the play.
What does that say about anything?
And I suppose the conversation was, which was the most dramatic? The real life hanging or what was happening up on the stage? Yeah. I mean, that conversation. Because in a way, the theatre's always striving to be relevant, to be true. To be an experience where you go in and you get it in the belly.
My question is, there was little or no competition then, maybe the odd execution. But there wasn't streaming services, cinema, TV.
But there was lots of theatre.
Yeah.
And plays were 4 hours long.
Right.
Because that's what they had to be. That's what the audience demanded. Uh-huh. The longer it was, the better. Now it has shrunk back.
Yeah.
So now we don't need a play that's 4 hours long. I've seen far too many plays that were too long. I never saw one that was too short.
We leave it at that. So, Philo in the Gaiety Theatre, April 22nd, 26th. We've only scratched the surface there. Peter Sheridan, thank you so much. We'll talk again.
And I could just say, it's a celebration of the spirit of Sheriff Street. That's at the core what it is.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.